We are now going to move to the East Coast. Our last speaker is Donald Witherell. Donald has worked for the Maine Department of Environmental Protection since 1971. From 1994 through 2012, he was the director of the Division of Watershed Management. Since 2012, Don has been the director of the Division of Environmental Assessment, which he is responsible for monitoring and assessing Maine surface waters and providing biennial reports on Maine's water quality. Don has participated on the steering committee of the Maine Ocean and Coastal Acidification Partnership, I know as MOCA, I think they call it, since June of 2018. And he is currently a member of Maine's Climate Council Coastal and Marine Work Group. Don, take it away.
Great, thank you, Holly. And hello, everybody. Good to be here. And just one correction on the bio, which is that I've actually been with the Maine DEP since 1979, not 71. So it 40 years, but still a good amount of time. So my discussion on, I think you lost me there for a moment. I'm back. I'm going to be talking on three topics.
I think we lost your audio.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I'm trying to advance the slide, but I so far have not been successful in doing that. So if you can advance.
Nope, I see your cursor now.
Okay, very, very good. I want to talk about three aspects of legislation in the state of Maine, starting with the 2014 Legislative Commission, which really got things going here. There certainly was more discussions prior to that, but I think that's a good kicking off place because that's where things really picked up and then transition to discussion about MOCA and then finally what's ongoing with the climate change legislation we have in Maine as well. It was mentioned at the outset that Maine is one of the states that's successfully enacted legislation, and while that's true to a certain extent, I think it's, we still look at it as work in progress. And so with that, we'll keep going here. If you to the next slide, which takes us to the 2014 legislation that passed. So I want to point out that it was a resolve that established a commission, and the commission was to study the effects of coastal and ocean acidification and its existing and potential effects on species that are commercially harvested. So that language is important because this was a tough sell politically. It was, as you can see on the slide, it was actually a law that went into effect without the governor's signature. The interest wasn't actually broadening it out for climate change, but because of again politics, it was felt that if it was more focused on commercially harvested species and just focusing on ocean coastal acidification, that it would have a better opportunity. And in fact, that's what happened. It did pass. Next slide. So it was a fairly short duration commission. It came into effect again summer of 2014. The group, which included legislators, scientists, state agency people, other NGOs participated. They met pretty much monthly through that fall and came up with a final report in January. So it was a very quick process. They did come up with six goals that they recommended, which if we can go to those. The first one was, and these goals, by the way, will look very familiar because as I was looking at Oregon's OAH action plan in the themes, it seems like there's some common threads throughout these goals. The first one, which is to invest in the capacity to monitor and investigate ocean acidification and the impacts on commercially important species. This has been a common theme throughout our discussions, both during that period and since. The second one was reducing emissions on carbon dioxide. This has also been a strong focus in the current legislation. Thirdly, the identifying land-based nutrients, and this was in recognition of the difference between coastal and ocean acidification, and there was a lot of discussion about the fact that we could do something about coastal acidification as opposed to ocean acidification. So there was a lot of attention given there. Increasing the capacity to mitigate, remediate, and adapt. Again, that was a common theme that we need increased resources and better coordination to do that. The need to communicate, to inform stakeholders, public and decision makers about OA and give people the tools to take action. And then lastly, keep this going. The concern was that this was not going to be a one and done proposition, that we would really need to continue this process following that 2015 report. So the report sunsetted the commission, and so one of the things they did recommend, and they actually introduced legislation, was to create an ongoing OCA council that would be responsible for carrying out these recommendations. The problem was there was no funding, so the legislation failed. But what they did say was that it would be fine to have a volunteer effort to carry on. You can go to the next. And hence was the formation of the Maine Ocean and Coastal Acidification Partnership, known as MOCA. So it did spawn out a number of the players that were involved in the 2014 commission remained active, including several legislators that have remained active to this day. MOCA has continued to advance those goals that were listed. So they've been a forum for bringing the public together, bringing stakeholders together, and continuing to discuss what the issues are, and also to advance those concerns to what is currently now the Maine Climate Council, which I'll get to in a moment. So MOCA, again, it's a relatively large group of people, but there is a smaller group that's the steering committee, which, as was previously mentioned, I've been involved with since 2018. The people in this photo, most of them are currently very active members. Again, it's a diversity of people, and that's been one of the keys, is that we have legislators, state agency people, people from the industry, as well as nonprofits and educators, all involved in advancing the work of MOCA. The group has come together and has sponsored a number of symposia and other events advancing the discussion about ocean and coastal acidification. We've had several policy meetings in recent years, and most recently, this past summer in July, we held three meetings, which were focused on research monitoring, policy and law, and resiliency and that adaptation. And those were to develop a recommended action plan to send to our Maine Climate Council, which I'll get to here in a moment. Again, the partnership has a diversity of individuals. This was taken back in 2016 as the group was coming together at the State House, and this was a strategy session to advance the work. So going back to last summer's workshops and the development of the action plan, again, some some very common themes in terms of the direction we felt that we need to be taking, identifying funding to support strategies and actions, continuing to build on efforts and enhance budgets so that we can continue monitoring and recognizing critical roles that municipalities, fishermen, people in aquaculture, and others are playing and will play to address climate change. These all resulted in a series of some additional recommendations. We can go to the next slide. So starting with the first one, which continues to be a problem that we have not been able to address. And so I come from this, from the environmental water quality monitoring perspective at the main DEP. And we have the problem of not having sufficient funding to do a coast-wide monitoring program. And we do have areas that we monitor, but they tend to be site-specific to existing discharges, as well as we're doing some monitoring in conjunction with other local groups, the Casco Bay Estuary Partnership being one where we collect quite a bit of data. But the efforts are not coordinated. It's not a comprehensive statewide program. And so we've been trying in various ways to approach how we can sustain a statewide monitoring program. Secondly, in recognition that there is no one-size-fits-all solution and that communities lack resources and need help in assessing how to adapt to climate change. This includes managing for increased storm intensities, both on the water and over the land, and developing, in some cases, municipal ordinances to help manage those activities. Strategies may include localized pilot remediation projects, development or expansion of aquaculture, increased license access for emerging species, and strategies to help shift from single species management to more integrated plans. The state should provide resources, training, and education to help those whose livelihoods are being impacted by climate change. And we should be enforcing regulations that reduce land-based impacts, particularly concerns for increased levels of nitrogen in coastal waters, point and non-point sources, and the recommendation that we should review existing stormwater regulations to deal with the land-based source. Requiring relevant state and municipal plans and permits to address climate change. So it's, again, a broader focus than just ocean and coastal acidification. The reference to ocean climate change was the state should use its regulatory authority to steer activities to those that do not harm coastal and marine environments. So, shifting gears to where we are today with the Climate Council. As I previously mentioned, MOCA has been providing a bridge to ocean coastal acidification from the 2014 Commission and the current Climate Council. And while Maine's reemerged as a state to fight climate change, there's been a lot of groundwork laid already. Maine's Climate Action Plan adopted in 2004 has resulted in several updates on progress and other reports focused on assessment, adaptation, and preparedness. But it's all currently leading to what is the ongoing work. So Governor Mills took office on January 3rd of 2019. She made combating climate change a key strategy in her inaugural address, emphasizing it with her statement, "Enough with the studies, talk, and debate. It is time to act." Next slide. The Maine Climate Council bill was enacted last spring. It established new targets for greenhouse gas emissions. It also created the Climate Council and a deadline for updating the Climate Action Plan. And that will be due in December 1st. An executive order was signed to achieve state carbon neutrality by 2045, and the Climate Council is tasked with including recommendations on how to achieve that neutrality in the action plan. So the council and how it operates has about 39 members, including board legislators, department heads, NGO reps, scientists, industry reps, and even a representative of Maine Youth and others. The kickoff meeting for this group was on September 26th. Most of the work is now focused through the steering committee, the science and technical subcommittee, and the working groups listed across the bottom. Of which the Coastal and Marine Working Group, which I am a member of, is focused on ocean coastal acidification as part of the strategies that we are working on. Next. The Science and Technical Subcommittee has been very active, has issued a phase one report to inform its work groups, recommendations with respect to ocean and coastal acidification are included, and in a lot of ways mirror the recommendations that came from the commission back in 2014, although the science has been advanced to reflect what we know today. So the work groups are currently where a lot of activity is going right now. The groups tend to have 30 to 40 members. They're further divided into subcommittees. Currently on the ocean or in the Coastal and Marine Working Group, we're working on both developing mitigation and adaptation strategies. So we're focusing on monitoring on how such things as a blue carbon strategy, looking at how to protect and enhance seagrass and looking at how we can sustain or how we can actually improve monitoring in order to better assess what we actually have and where we need to go. So the timeline for all this has indicated that we are currently in the phase where the working groups are developing those strategies. There will be a stakeholder and public engagement opportunity happening over the next couple of months. The strategies recommendations are due to the Climate Council by June 30th of this year. They will then be working on it and developing a update to our state climate action plan, and that will be due December 1st to be updated every 4 years. In addition, there will be annual progress reports submitted to the legislature in January of each year. The legislature will then be authorized to report out bills to implement. And so it all sounds very encouraging, and the big concern, of course, is, and we've heard it already here today, it's the funding aspect. Where does the money come from? And I think that's going to continue to be our struggle as we go forward. I also just wanted to point out, since it was mentioned earlier about the International Alliance, that Maine has become a member. We formally joined in January, so we're pleased to be part of that organization. I do want to give some thanks to some of my colleagues, Esperanza Santiaf, who is currently heading up the MOCA group, Ivy Frenoker, who is the Casco Bay keeper with Friends of Casco Bay, who was the former head of the Mocha Group, and they both are currently very active in the Climate Council working groups, and as well as Cassandra Rose, who is the senior science analyst with the governor's office's policy of innovation in the future. And my thanks to all of them for contributing the slides for this presentation. So with that, I think we can take any questions.
Thank you, Don. Excellent. Yes, we will take some questions. Before we move into the questions,